You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 FM St. Paul. Radio without boundaries. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Coming up next on Art Matters, documentary filmmakers Gabriella and Eric Delahome discuss What Were You Watching? A look at the influence of media, film, and television on the baby boomers. And an interview with director Heidi Hunter-Botz about Playlist America 09 at the Pillsbury House Theater. Stay tuned.
Winds blow, people scatter, cultures batter. Art Matters. Arts matter. Arts matter. Art matters.
And thanks for joining us here on Art Matters on KFAI. I'm Maria Morstead. And joining me now in the studio is Gabriella Delahome and Eric Holm of Taviet Productions. And they are out with their latest documentary called What Were You Watching? It's a look at the influence of media, film, and television on the baby boomers. They will have their world premiere this Saturday, May 9th at the Suburban World Theater. Doors open at 6, screening at 7. Hello, Gabriella and Eric.
Aloha.
Hello.
They are collaborators in work and life, newlyweds. That's too much information. But Gabriella, I interviewed you a couple years ago. In fact, if you want to dig into the archives of mnartist.org, you were part of my series, Radio MN Artist. And at that time, I talked to you about your feature, Perspectives on Steppen. And now you're out with your latest documentary. Do you want to give us kind of an overview of your documentary work and Taviet Productions?
Absolutely. Again, Maria, thank you for having us here. And an overview. Well, a lot has happened in 2 years. We got married, as you mentioned, and we're really blessed. We started working in television and commercial advertisement 3 years ago. And we worked really well together. And I was coming at the butt end of my production filming of Perspectives on Steppen. And Eric helped me with a lot of the final cutting and final editing of that particular film, actually more like post-production. I cut the whole film, I lost the film, and then I recut it, I finalized it like 2 days before the premiere. But Eric came in and did all like the tweaking. So we worked really well then. And then, you know, we had a documentary film in between, but that fell through. So we just decided, in the meantime, we also did a documentary for the Minnesota Historical Society, a film contest, a 10-minute film, and we went ahead and made a film with this woman that we met. Her name is Betty, and the film is titled On the Screen. It's a 10-minute short. And we had studied all these archives, all these, the Prelinger archives of stock footage from like
1929 on up.
Yeah, and it just kind of became a passion. We were like, oh, look at all this great stock footage and nobody's using it and it's free copyright. We should really make a feature length with this.
That's smart. Save yourself headaches.
So we, this other documentary fell through that it was like this passion I had had for a decade and it didn't come through and you know what? It worked out just fine. So I really like threw myself into my work and for like a year, we just studied and researched stock footage. And the thing about the stock footage is that you're not only looking at like an hour-long film. You're looking at 30-second to three, five-minute clips. And then you're revisiting them and revisiting and then looking at other stuff. And it's such a conglomerate and such a huge media archive. So you're trying to figure out how can you piece all of these things together to make one cohesive final feature film. So that's what took so long for a year, just the archives alone.
And how did the theme emerge? I mean, you just had all this material and then it kind of came to you, wow, what has been the cumulative effect of this media?
While we were working on the film On the Screen, we were talking to people from the Greatest Generation. And quite often they had wonderful stories about their relationship. We were looking for their relationship with radio, film, television. But there seemed to be something shameful to them about it.
Really?
They did not want to talk about it on camera. And the few that did wanted to steer it into something that was their interest and not the point of the documentary until we found the one woman who would who had worked in television basically from day one and had spent 40 years in the business. And she was a treasure trove of information, and she allowed us to actually call up clips and file footage by name because she remembered every single one of them and who was in it and what they did and where to find it.
Where do you think the shame came from? I mean, I watched your trailer, so I'm seeing you're referencing, well, some maybe Cold War propaganda stuff, the duck and cover stuff, the ham spear bear, Ozzie and Harriet, and that sort of thing. Absolutely. Why this hesitancy to make reference to the media they grew up with?
That was the greatest generation. Now we move to the baby boomers.
Oh, okay.
And they are a totally different story. They love the media, they love to talk about it, and they know how to. And we had talked about it amongst ourselves, and we decided that it was time to get their stories on tape now before they lost it. And, you know, unfortunately, one of our interviewees has died in the meantime. She passed in December. So
life, it happens, you know, as you're filming and as you're going along the way. So we keep talking about how extraordinary our work really is. We love what we do, and to spend, you know, 200 hours over the course of a year in a room by yourself studying footage alone is a remarkable gift. And then also beyond that, going out into the world and setting up interviews. We set up interviews in Boston, Missouri, Minneapolis, and Duluth. Then after you've got somewhat of an idea of what it is that you're going to be filming, then lining up those interviews, and then spending the time with the people and really getting to know them and really asking them really in-depth questions, or just having coffee with them. You know, it goes to such different extremes of communication while you're working over a long period of time on a project. Because it's not overnight. It's, you know, it's been 2 years in the making. But spending time with the greatest generation and spending time with the baby boomers was a very drastically different experience in communication and relationship to each other.
Yeah, can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Is that they know media and they know how to talk about it, so they're just generally more media savvy, literate, more have criticism about what they're saying.
They did grow up with television in their homes, so mm-hmm. they know what it should look like. Even if they don't bring it into their daily lives, they have an awareness of what it is. That seemed to be completely lacking in the greatest generation. And, you know, and rightly so. They did not have this in their homes on a daily basis. You know, when they went to see movies, that was a big deal. And they looked at it as something very formal and something very private. I'm not sure if it was some sort of tabloid journalism that had done this or, you know, where that hesitancy came from.
But overall, they did sense an effect. They could articulate the effect and the influence of media in their lives.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, sitting with them as a director, always as a director, you're directly dealing with your, not only your subject matter, but you're dealing also with the people involved. And a big part of the big difference for me was that the greatest generation, they had grown up with radio. They really wanted a story to evolve. They wanted that beginning, middle, and end. They wanted that sense of almost imaginative outlet. While the baby boomers were a little bit faster paced, they knew their media, they wanted visual clips, they wanted quick, you know, 30-second clips, maybe at the most two-minute clips. Other than that, they weren't going to sit through much more than that. So it was the pacing for me that I had to really slow down and take my time with the greatest generation. But then I had to pick up the pace as far as like media, this whole like bank of media information and knowledge. That's really what it came down to, was timing and pacing.
So was it pretty easy for you to find this narrative arc yourself, your own sort of sense?
Once they started telling us their stories, several of the people had wonderful stories that unfortunately we couldn't find any footage to back it up.
Uh-huh.
So there were a few things we had to let go of that are killing me even now. But
the ones that got away.
Exactly. But the stories we got from the baby boomers seemed to have some kind of a resonant core amongst all of them. They all had the very same experience, and there is that experience of television that it is kind of a cultural pathway that everybody shares, so that people who grew up in Florida knew Pepsodent toothpaste just as well as the people who grew up in Duluth. And that was part of the fascinating aspect of
it. And the reason why I'm laughing is because, you know, if you sit through hours of this, like, Pepsodent commercials of the 1950s, they're really clever and they're really funny and they're just funny. There was more humor in the culture via studying this archival footage.
Have you been watching Mad Men throughout this?
Purposely not.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Probably good. I'm just guessing because I haven't seen it, but I saw some clip where she talked about the morality and the Ozzie and Harriet show and stuff. And I can sort of imagine in my head that you sort of take it to the Woodstock generation. And so they grow up with, like, no gyrating your pelvis, Elvis, and then you get to the...
We have that very story. About someone whose father wouldn't let them watch Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show because
I'm psychic.
It was yeah, exactly. And that seems to be a very common thing that happened with this, you know, 50s generation.
So, I mean, I guess I can guess the dates of the baby boom generation, but is there kind of a particular time frame you're looking at?
Well, we especially because we're looking for public domain footage. It ends like in the early to mid 60s. But anybody who grew up in the 40s, we have someone who remembers seeing Harry S. Truman live on television, all the way to people who only wanted to talk about Star Wars. So, you know, we cover quite a gamut in there.
So what do you think the 20-something kids will think when they see this? Is it old school or is it...
You know what? I think that poses a wonderful question. I don't care. Because, and I'll give you a good answer for that question. Because when I throw myself into a project, I become very attached to the culture that I'm working with and the people that I'm working with and the knowledge that I gather. And it becomes like this gift of myself as an artist to that specific culture and people and time period. And anybody else outside of that bubble, they can go chew bubble gum. You know what I mean? Like, you can't please everybody, so you just like, oh, well.
But from my perspective.
Yeah, your perspective.
Come see the film.
Well,
yeah, right?
I've had a run-in in the workplace where I was talking to a 24-year-old, and I made a reference to Cheers. And this young woman had no idea what I was talking about. And I thought, wow, what's missing here? You know, am I that far past it, or has something not been transferred, you know, via media? And I thought this would be a good way to maybe tie in a lot of the cultural references that I grew up hearing from my parents. You know, my father used to look at the lake in the spring and say, oh, that's where all the yellow went. And I'd say, what?
Yeah, what does that mean?
But he was talking a Pepsodent commercial from the 50s. Now, you'll wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. And we had people reference that during the making of the documentary. So, of course, that's one of the products that's in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just have a couple minutes to wrap up. So anything else you want to convey about this film and encourage people to come out to the suburban world on Saturday?
Yeah, I do. Like, come support independent arts, independent artists. You know, we've been running Taviat Film Productions since 1999. And then we got our first business loan and funding in 2002. And it's been a lot of hard work. We're finally coming to that place. I feel as though I'm finally coming to that place as a film producer, filmmaker, where it's more even ground. I have a better, more solid footing as an artist and filmmaker. And I'm really, really proud of that. It's been so much work. So come support independent art. Absolutely. Filmmaking and... How cool, like, a filmmaking in the area. We get to world premiere in the place we live, work, and love, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Absolutely.
And we get to see all this old school media that
we've absolutely
never seen before. Do you have a website?
We do. It's the same as it's always been. It's Taviat Film Productions, and the website is www.taviat.com.
Taviat.com. Okay, well, what were you watching? A look at the influence of media, film, and television on the Baby Boomers world premiere this Saturday, May 9th. The Suburban World, doors open at 6, screening at 7. Thank you very much.
Thank
Gabriella
you.
Gabriella De La Home and Eric Holm. Thanks for coming
so
in.
Much.
Thank you so much.
Dum, dum, deedle, dum, dum, deedle, dum, dum, deedle, dum, dum. There was a turtle by the name of Bert. And Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt.
He knew just what to do. He ducked and covered, ducked and covered.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You and you
and you
and you.
And cover.
And you're back with us here on KFAI on Art Matters. I'm Maria Moore.